two very special guests who are two very special friends of mine who are, I believe, they are the probably some of the best tantric teachers out there right now teaching. They are the authors of two incredible books which should be in everyone's library at home, The Essence of Tantric Sexuality and Tantra for Erotic Empowerment. And I'd like to welcome Mark Michaels and Patricia Johnson. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks.
Thanks for having us, and thanks for that great intro.
Yeah, nice.
Well, thank you for being here, and thank you for these great books, because they really are, they, in my opinion, are essential reading. They should be in everyone's library, especially The Essence of Tantric Sexuality, because that book has a very special pedigree.
Yeah, it does. It builds upon lots of many years, right, Mark?
Yeah. Our teacher gave a series of lectures back in 1977. His name is Dr. John Mumford, well known for the book Ecstasy Through Tantra. And these lectures that he gave back in the 70s were probably the first talks on sexual tantra given in the West by someone who'd been traditionally initiated in India. And the lectures were available on tape for a number of years. They went out of print, but not before a number of other people borrowed from them without crediting the source. And so we started studying with Swamiji about 10 years ago, and Patricia got the idea that we should make a book out of this material. And so she started transcribing the tapes.
There was like 8 hours of tapes, so I transcribed them. Yeah. And he talks very parenthetically and very quickly. So I did manage to get through that and then landed on Mark's lap at that point for him to iron it out into a linear form.
Well, and also Swamiji was very reluctant initially about this whole project, but he finally gave us his blessing and was very happy that we were going forward and actually contributed with adding some additional material. So it's a kind of funny collaboration because we took those original lectures, transcribed them, adapted them, added some new material that he brought into it, and then kind of put our own gloss on a good deal of it as well. So we tried to be true to what he was teaching back then, but also to make it more contemporary and accessible and take it out of that kind of very 70s feel that some of the lectures had.
But there's some like really esoteric teachings that are presented in that book, and things that you won't find written about and spoken about so frankly in any other text that I've read, right?
That's what I really like about you and your work, is that you bring that classical, you bring the esoteric, but you do it in a way that is understandable for somebody, you know, who is a New Yorker. But I like the fact that you have that background, that you are the lineage holders. And could you give us your lineage names?
Your initiated names? Swami Umeshanand Saraswati.
And I'm Devi Vinanand.
Well, welcome again. But what's really incredible is that, you know, you have this and you're able to present it, and, you know, it's so different, since I've witnessed several other, I'll use the word, neo-tantra classes and read other neo-tantra books, and, you know, and I'll give you the floor now, so you can, if you want to go off on neo-tantra, please be my guest.
Well, you know, it's complicated because in some ways we're all kind of neo-tantra. I mean, in fairness to a lot of the people out there, we don't live in, you know, 8th century India, and we don't come out of that culture. And so I think the task is for us is to be mindful of that tradition and to understand it as much as we can and try to make it available and comprehensible for people who don't live in that culture. I think where things kind of go off the rails is where people don't know anything or know very little about the tradition, have no training at all, and just, you know, take a 10-day intensive and then they're out there teaching Tantra.
Or they've discovered something that they feel is sacred sexuality and a method of working with people and stuff, which is great and valid and all in its own right, but we prefer if they wouldn't call it Tantra.
I have no problem with people who, you know, they get a vision, they get an understanding of something, but just call it that, you know, if you're truly courageous, have the courage to call it what it is and don't try to, you know, make it what it's not. I have no problem with that.
Yeah. I mean, we attended this lecture one time and of course we didn't reveal ourselves as being teachers. We just were kind of checking it out. And this couple was teaching and they had read maybe one book that was really off the wall, and they started talking about that Tantra originally came from Babylon, and it was all channeled, and it was all, it's like, okay, if you want to talk about something and say that it's channeled, that's fine, but don't call it Tantra, which is a very specific thing.
Yeah, and there's a definite history to it. You can read history books. You can get information. It doesn't need to be made up.
I mean, I think another piece that tends to get a little bit messed up in modern society is that a lot of people, and this is really a result of the whole Osho movement, which, you know, it's a very complicated subject, but I think the one of the big downsides is that there's been a whole blending of kind of psychotherapeutic and cathartic techniques with Tantra, and really, There's not a place for that in the tradition. And the idea is that in the tradition that you come to this practice from a place of being a pretty well-balanced and emotionally strong and centered person, that you're not going into it to get healed. And I think that's really an important principle to bear in mind. It's not to say that you can't get great benefits from it, that certain kinds of healing experiences can't happen.
They certainly do. Yeah.
Yes.
But if you go into it with like, oh, I'm going to do Tantra to get healed, I think that's really kind of confusing what it's about.
Yeah, I think that, I personally like the idea of catharsis, but I think that, you know, if that's what you want, that's what you should be doing. You should be going strictly for that. You should be going for a healing, you should be going for therapy. You shouldn't be doing this. Unless you're going to do, like you said, if you're going to do Neo Tantra, that's fine because that's what that is anyway. But if you really want the real thing, if you really want to go, first of all, if you really want the real thing, you should call you up. or they should go visit your website, which is tantrapm.com.
Not
for catharsis. No, but I think most people probably would be beneficial if they did have some kind of therapy first, and probably they should have therapy anyway because we probably all need therapy.
Yeah, exactly. But you should be going to someone who's trained.
You want someone trained. Yeah,
and really knowledgeable, and I think that's another aspect of where I find some of the neo-tantra kind of problematic, is that you have people out there doing the work of therapists or getting very close to it without the training that's necessary for it.
And it's, you can give people pretty incredible experiences. You can hyperventilate them and you can, you know, have them visit real intense emotional states and really blow them apart in a way, so to speak, in which they have sort of a wow experience, and then put them outside the door and sort of send them home for their work week, that's where it gets really, really problematic, and any good therapist or anybody who's really skilled in these techniques would never, ever dream of, you know, pushing someone to open up so much and then just sending them right back out into the world.
Yeah, as someone who's gone through something like that, I don't really appreciate it.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm going to be blown apart, at least give me a warning, you know. Do I really want to do that?
You know,
I don't think so. You know, but that's part of the wisdom that comes with age.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what's especially special about you is where you met.
That's right. Thank you for bringing that up.
The story of our meeting is a very interesting one, because we met, as you know, at Sexy Spirits. It was the first official teaching gig that I had after I'd done a teacher training. And I really wasn't quite sure where I wanted to go with the teaching that I was doing. At that time, it was a more of a neo-tantric approach, and the training was really oriented towards sexual healing. And I was aware at that point that that approach wasn't really for me, and that I wanted to go deeper into the tradition. And Patricia attended the lecture.
Yeah, it was my first lecture to attend on Tantra yet. I had read several books, you know, through the years. So it was my first lecture, and there was Mark. He walks in the room, and I'm like, all right, Mr. Tantra man. Uh-huh.
The truth is that she thought that anybody who teaches Tantra is only doing it because they can't get laid otherwise.
But then he started talking, and he knew his stuff, and it was a really well-prepared lecture, and so I was impressed.
And so, I mean, the funny thing is we'd actually been on a sacred sexuality listserv before, which I discovered when she gave me her email address, and she looked very familiar to me, and I couldn't really place where I knew her from, and someone introduced us after the talk, and I said, "Do I know you?" And she said, "You know, we tried to figure it out."
No, I don't think there's any.
No, I
just looked familiar.
And I really, it wasn't a line. I really meant it.
You can't lie. You can't lie. So.
So we started emailing back and forth, and one day she said, "Well, can we meet for coffee?" And I said, "Well, I have to be in town today, so yeah, why don't we do it today?"
So coffee turned into sushi, and the whole time I'm thinking, am I going to hire him to teach me Tantra? I mean, what does that mean? But I want to know. But gosh, could I actually hire or get a teacher for this? I just was trying to grapple with that. And
I had decided at that point that I definitely was not interested in working hands-on with students or clients or going that route at all. So she said, "Are you going to be my teacher?" And I also knew that she really knew about as much as I did at that point. So
I said, "No, you kind of know what as much as I know, really, in a lot of ways." And then...
Well, wait. She kind of goes, "Well, can we be friends?"
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Can't we at least be friends, you know? And then...
And then I said, "Well, why don't we explore this on a sexual level?" So we really got together to practice sexual tantra together. And that was
the
10 years ago, a little more than 10 years ago.
10 years ago. We've been married 8.5 years. And wrote 2 books together, so
yeah.
It's really powerful stuff you're working with.
And we actually started working with Dr. Mumford about 5 or 6 months after we met.
Yeah.
And that was really when we started delving into the tradition a lot more deeply. He teaches online, and for people who are interested in a more yogic approach to Tantra, which touches on sexuality but isn't explicitly sexual, studying with him online is just an incredible experience.
And
I'll give his website really quickly as well. It's John, J-O-N-N, Mumford, M-U-M-F-O-R-D, consult.com.
Cool.
And they can get information about his online programs there.
And you also created a Facebook group for him.
Yeah, we just set that up.
Thanks for mentioning that, yeah.
And that's I really like him at the book Ecstasy Through Tantra, the wonderful book. I think just his knowledge and his ways of putting things, and also the articles that he's written for Llewellyn are, I think, really, really classic.
Well, this is someone
I particularly like his take on the whole subject of male ejaculation.
Yeah, you want to talk about that?
Sure, why not?
Well, before we do,
we are on the adult channel, by the way.
Okay. Yeah.
Before we get to that, I do want to say that unlike, you know, just about anybody else living today, Dr. Mumford started going to India and studying in the mid-1950s.
Wow.
And so and he was initiated as a Swami by Satyananda Saraswati in the mid-70s. And until recently, he went back to India pretty much annually to teach workshops there. So he's got a long, long, long history of studying the authentic stuff.
Yes.
With some of the greatest teachers of the 20th century. So, you know, he's just as a knowledge base and a resource, he's beyond compare.
And there's great pictures of him in the book, Tantra, the Essence of Tantric Sexuality.
Yeah.
So when he was a young man, he was an extremely accomplished hatha yogin, and he later developed congenital arthritis that made him unable to do things like the headstands and postures that you see in the book. But he retains all of the other aspects of yogic knowledge. And, you know, even with the arthritis, he's still in his 70s, sits full lotus, and, you know, it's...
Wow.
So, but now we can change subjects quickly and talk about ejaculation.
That's one of the hottest debated topic, because there's so much information, but I would also say there's a lot of misinformation on this subject, and there's a lot of confusion, I believe, between Tantra and Taoism that a lot of people put out there.
Often people assume that they're one and the same. We find that a lot.
Yeah.
And where there is some overlap is it's true that in the Taoist tradition, there's an idea that, you know, the older that a man gets, the less he should ejaculate. And I'm not terribly well versed in the specifics of that, but there is this concept. That concept also does exist in India. And, you know, there's this idea that your semen is your life force, and that by ejaculating it, you're wasting it. And that does exist in some Indian traditions in Ayurveda and so forth. And probably in some schools of Tantra as well. But if you go back and you really look at the classical sources, the act of ejaculating is a key part of the sexual ritual in traditional Tantra. And so this whole emphasis that we get in a lot of the neo-Tantric schools on retention is not authentically part of the tradition. And I think there's a lot of problematic aspects to it.
I mean, you think about the retention, it can be a really powerful tool, but it's a case where some people start to kind of take on the tool that was supposed to take them to another level and make that their, you know, where they reside, you know, and non-ejaculatory sex practices are really, really valuable and can allow you to get to points where your energetic sexual arousal and all that can really circulate through the body. A lot of people don't manage to stay aroused long enough to experience those energetic changes.
Yeah, I mean, it's especially as a learning tool. I mean, I think that it's very important for men to learn how to have non-ejaculatory orgasms and to separate the physical ejaculation from the experience of orgasm. But if you make non-ejaculation a goal in itself, then you're really actually kind of playing a real kind of male power trip, because
right.
you're not allowing yourself to surrender completely to the experience. And in the classical tradition, the ejaculation is an offering. And to withhold that offering, you know, is almost a kind of a violation of what the tradition is about.
Also, our understanding is that to achieve blissful states in tantric sexual ritual, you want to achieve or attain as high a level of arousal as you can. That means risking ejaculation. You want to be on the edge. And I wonder and suspect, I've never had a non-ejaculatory partner, someone who practiced that type of sex, but where it's just the level of arousal maybe curtailed, so that the person that can, you know, have sex for several hours, but what they're doing is just basically maintaining wood for that period of time, but never dancing on the edge of just their intent, the pleasure ceiling.
Right. So they're at three when they should be at eight. You know.
Right.
And you know, it can have diminishing returns, so to speak, where you know, people, a symptom of non-ejaculatory sex practices can become an impotence. If you're really fearing you're going to spill your life force, you know, well, then your body says, all right, I'm not going to let you have sex again, then we're safe. So,
right.
It can really backfire.
Yeah, now, I mean, I've heard anecdotally about people who've had that experience. I think another piece of it, and again, you know, this is kind of, your mileage may vary. It's going to depend a lot on who you are individually. But in my own experience, I did an over a week long intensive retreat with somebody else, and the structure of the retreat was that you were supposed to have sex with your partner every day, and at least once a day, and it was supposed to be non-ejaculatory sex. And the final ritual was a prolonged tantric sex ritual, and at the conclusion of which, and this part is really in keeping with the tradition, the conclusion of which the men were to ejaculate. By the time we got to that, by the time, the end of the ritual, I was not very turned on. I was barely erect. It was a very unsatisfying ejaculation. It was an anticlimax, so to speak.
Right.
And I, in kind of learning my own body, I've discovered that, generally speaking, not quite the more that I ejaculate, the more turned on I am, but close to that. And I'm pushing 50, so
It works that way for me. The more, the more, you know, that the flows and the more the energy flows, then it just gets better and better. And the more I desire sex, that's for sure. But I mean, so I want to point out that, you know, using it as a tool is very, very important. But there's some pitfalls when it becomes non-ejaculatory sex becomes your practice. So that, you know, it's just, I mean, there's real value. And also, there are some people that this is the most satisfying type of sexual activity for them. And then by all means, practice it. But don't, you know, when it becomes a dogmatic thing
Or like you have this health obsession with it. Because the health thing, you know, as far as I'm aware, the current research suggests that actually it's less healthy to retain than it is to ejaculate.
Yes.
Good for the prostate.
Yeah.
To ejaculate. So.
And if you think about biology, it kind of makes sense. You know, our body is producing semen on a regular basis, and it's got to go somewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
And like this supposed idea that there was some kind of channel a physical channel in the spine, that it could be taken up into the brain, and there is just no medical scientific evidence for that. I think even Osho said that there is no physical channel. It's an energetic channel. You move it energetically, but you don't actually move the semen up the spine and into the brain.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's some questions that maybe people, when they first encountered a cerebral spinal fluid, they thought, oh, that fluid looks similar to ejaculate, so it must be the same. You know, like how tiny sperm look like little men floating around, you know, before we really knew what we were dealing with. So.
But, yeah, I think actually I'm not familiar with that from Osho, but that's our understanding as well, and that's the teachings that we have, that it's not really about the actual substance. It's about the energy. And you know, when you get into some kind of more advanced approaches, you certainly move that energy and you consume the fluid, or you absorb the energy of the fluid internally and circulate it several times before ejaculating, and then there's not this energy loss.
So
you visualize and do various kind of pranayamas to do that.
The story I use to relate to this is, you know, we get energy from breathing, and we get the prana energy and stuff, but, you know, when we sneeze into the Kleenex, we don't go, oh my God, my life force, it's gone. So.
Oh no.
We're still alive. We've retained energy, so.
I think we're still, at least here in America and probably in Europe as well, we're still operating, you know, from the 2,000 years of the Christian Catholic traditions, and how that screwed everybody up, and I think maybe that's somehow leaked into this.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is an element of that. Well, as I said before, that it can become this male power and control thing,
right,
and a sort of withholding, a denial, an unwillingness to surrender and give yourself over to the feminine force, and so it can become, I think, a real kind of male power trip, which it probably actually is in Asia as well. I mean, India, for all of the worship of women and the goddesses and everything, it's a society that has a very strong anti-female dimension as well.
I can think burying people at a funeral pile, how that's pretty anti-feminine.
Yeah, and even today, I mean, last time I was there, I saw women being beaten on the streets, and it just was accepted. You see anything there, but it's, there is definitely that anti-feminine attitude and a very macho male culture that excludes women, in ways that we don't even in this society anymore. I mean, I was able to visit kind of private men's clubs and this whole sort of sphere of male power that, you know, that has more or less been eradicated in this society or reduced to a much smaller kind of, you know, influence.
But also, in many people attempt to use Tantra to develop ESP, but you have a different definition of ESP.
Yeah, it's extrasensual perception.
Yeah, once you start to, I mean, the more you study Tantra, you start to understand that it's really based in physiology and science, and it really works with the intricacies of how our senses operate.
And, you know, a lot of the non-sexual meditations in Tantra really involve developing great facility with your awareness and being able to shift from internal to external, to being able to focus very intently on your partner, to being acutely aware of how you are inside. And that can really, developing that ability to focus, I don't want to quite go to the point of saying it gives you sort of psychic powers, but it certainly gives you the capacity to be very, very attuned to your partner and to use that attunement to take your partner higher and higher. And I think that's another key piece of what kind of the difference between the tantric approach to sexuality and the more conventional one is, lies in that any sexual encounter that you have, if you're with a partner who's on the tantric path, it's no longer just about you getting off. And it's not like, oh, I'm going to please you a little bit so that then maybe you'll please me in return and I'll get off. It's about we're in this together. We're building this energy together. We're taking each other higher and higher and higher. And it's a much more
collaborative process.
Yeah.
And it becomes a co-creation. The whole time together and the whole experience is just a co-creation, and you see what you both come out with.
And what happens with that then is, as I said, you're just so in tune that you almost feel like you're reading each other's minds. And I don't think it's really paranormal. It has to do with just, you know, noticing the changes in breathing rate, the trembling of the skin, flushing here and there, you know, all of those things, and you get much more attuned to it.
Yeah. But I just wanted to really also on the extra sensual perception is on the level of knowledge of how pheromones operate and how these are really sort of what really attracts us to each other. I mean, we think someone has charisma or a really powerful auric draw. Oftentimes it's your nose that's telling you that, and it's in knowing that as a tantric practitioner, you can use your own pheromone system and really attract people. It's quite amazing how powerful it is.
There are a couple of chapters in The Essence of Tantric Sexuality that deal with perfume magic and using your own pheromones, and we won't go into the
magical recipe.
It's a very effective and interesting set of practices. And, you know, we chose the title Essence of Tantric Sexuality with, you know, very consciously, because we have these two chapters on perfume magic, and we also talk about the role of sexual fluids. I mean, as I mentioned in the classical rituals, the fluids are an offering and they're really important. So we also came up with a kind of a little tagline that the essence of tantric sexuality is the exchange of essences. And, you know, in this era of safe sex, of course, you have to be very careful about that.
Right.
And for people who are not fluid bonded, we recommend using substitute, you know, symbolic fluids to symbolize.
But if you're working with these substances as a scent base,
there's safe
ways to work with that.
So if you want to find out how to do perfume magic, people, pick up The Essence of Tantric Sexuality.
Yeah, actually, that leads into another, I think, important topic that people sometimes underemphasize when they're talking about Tantra, and that is the magical dimensions of it. And there is a longstanding magical tradition in Tantra. I mean, in our second book, we describe a pretty intense ritual, which...
It deals with magic and you know, very fantastic level.
So there are many of the tantric texts have long explanations for how to cast spells, what herbs and feathers of birds and dried salamanders and stuff to mix together and to create certain kinds of spells. So there is this real kind of village magic tradition that's part of Tantra. What happens, I think, a lot in the Western world is we think, oh, all that stuff is either superstition or it's not spiritual somehow.
Right.
And there are, you know, there are things in some of the tantric texts that say you shouldn't be pursuing these powers for their own sake, and that's kind of the road to some kind of damnation or other. But if you go a little deeper, the idea is that in the classical tradition is that you get both powers and mystical experiences, and that they're not really separate. So we really think that the magical aspects of Tantra are not something to be ashamed of or to minimize, but we like to think about magic a little bit differently, and really the magic is an internal process. It's about transforming yourself, about using your will to transform yourself and evolve. So,
and isn't there a tantric tradition, a particular word for will?
Icha, is that the word you're? There's, I know
I
there's.
The one with, I think it starts with an S.
Oh, I know we've had this conversation before, and I'm not remembering right now.
It's a. I think it's a direct. It's a direct. It's a really direct meaning of "do what thou wilt" from that tradition.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have it here somewhere because I'm online right now.
Oh, okay.
Pull it up.
It wouldn't be swa.
No.
No.
I know it was the one. I know it's with. Let's see if I can find it right here. No, that's not it. Okay. I know it's for will. Oh, we'll just look it up.
Well, in any case, yeah. I mean, I think,
yes.
You know, and you mentioned do what thou wilt, and obviously that takes us to Crowley, and
yes.
It's pretty clear that he had some knowledge about Tantra. I mean, I don't think that he was initiated, but he did, you know, he did spend time on the Indian subcontinent, and he was exposed to it for sure,
and
influenced by it.
Wrote a really good book on yoga.
Yes.
Yeah. Very important book, so.
Yes, 8 lectures on yoga, highly recommended for anyone interested in yoga, and it's really not about the hatha variety. And he defines the essence of yoga, and I hope I'll get this right, but I think it's sit down, shut up, stop thinking, get out.
Yeah.
That easy.
It is. Well, it could be if quiet one's mind.
Yeah.
Let's see. I almost have it here. It's the Eastern version. Anyway, we'll get to that later. But anyway, yes, there is both a yoga, both Eastern. Anyway, but you also have two wonderful DVDs out.
Yeah, they're one's called Tantric Sexual Massage for Lovers,
and the other's Advanced Tantric Sex Secrets.
But don't let the title fool you. It's really suitable
for
beginners as well. And these DVDs illustrate material from the essence of tantric sexuality. And if you're more of a visual person, they're a great way to go.
They are very erotic and explicit, which I really like. Yeah. Generally, I like that. But on a deeper level, I really think it's important when you're approaching the tantric path to not abandon what is erotic and what gives you high states of arousal.
Yes.
Sometimes I think people think that tantric sex practices involve having sex in a different way than what they normally do or what really turns them on. It means that I'll have to
give up
things
that I like.
Yeah, and it really embraces all forms of sexual expression with consent, and you can really take these principles and transform those the ways you enjoy sexual activity.
Yeah, I think what happens in a lot of kind of the New Age Tantra world is that we replicate, or people replicate, the Christian yeah. model, which is, you know, sex is bad unless you're married.
Yes.
Well, what, and even then maybe it's not really so great. but in a lot of kind of the neo-tantric world, it's like sex is bad unless you're doing sacred sex.
Yeah.
And sacred sex looks like, okay, we're going to take a bath together. We're going to light candles.
We're going to dance.
We might play some music and dance for each other.
We're going to give each other, you know, gratitudes and
and, you know, and honor each other as the god and goddess. And there has to be all of this window dressing put on it in order for it to be okay. We were doing a panel last night, and I said, you know, the three-minute quickie bent over the bathroom sink is just as sacred as when you do all of the ritual. It's
that's great.
You know, it's really how you think about it that matters. It's about bringing the attitude of reverence and honoring into even and it's something that has the appearance of just being, you know,
ravishment.
Yeah. Or just a, you know, just quick kind of getting off kind of sex. It's not like that one kind of sex is better than the other or more spiritual. It's all spiritual. It's what mindset do we bring to it that matters. And if we're playing a game of saying this kind of sex is sacred and this kind is profane, we're still locked in a very puritanical way of thinking.
In a dualistic world as well, sort of this and other, that's other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that allows me then to use one of my favorite quotes then, because actually you were there that night. I don't know if you actually heard it. Barbara Kareles' book party at the Museum of Sex.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When she tipped her hat to Betty Dodson and called Betty the original tantrika, and I whispered to Betty, do we have to call everything tantra? And her infamous remark is, how many fucking candles do I have to light?
Well, that's funny.
Well, Betty, if you're listening, you don't have to light a single fucking candle.
Yeah. And it's funny that you tell that story because we, in essence, talk a lot about Betty and Swamiji had not met her and just really admired her work without knowing who she was and talked about her at some length in his lecture. And really, he basically said, well, she has virtually no knowledge of the tantric tradition, but what she's talking about is the tantric approach using self-pleasuring as a meditative practice.
Yes.
And, you know, I mean, I know Betty, you know, how many candles do I have to light or whatever, but she really, without, and it's a perfect, you know, expression of this, without having to call it tantra, she was doing tantra.
Yes.
And I think that's a very important, you know, thing for people to think about. It's not this, tantra's not this thing that's way out there and weird and you know, you have to do all this stuff. It's about what you do with your mind more than anything
else.
Yeah.
The rituals and everything else are really just tools for focusing your mind on what you're doing.
Yes. I think that's fantastic. I think because it's all about your intention.
Yeah.
Yeah. And your awareness. I mean, yes. It's really the key. I mean, if you're in a kind of just purely pleasure-seeking mode and you're really just not there or you're using sex to check out, I think you're getting into a realm where it's probably never going to be tantric.
Right.
It's not to say that you can't do that sometimes. I mean, it can be very gratifying, and there's nothing morally wrong with it. But if somebody is really just kind of blindly hedonistic and not very engaged with what they're doing, and they're using sex as a tool for escape. It's there's not a lot of awareness there.
And they're going to miss a lot of the rich possibilities, too.
Well, it's all about being present and being focused.
Yeah. And again, I think, you know, I sort of touched on this before, but I think this question of focus is a very complicated and important one for people to pick apart. It's not just a matter of being focused all the time or being completely aware all the time, because we can't possibly have that happen. It's really about being skillful and learning how to focus your awareness when it's appropriate and how to withdraw it when it's appropriate to do that. The kind of cosmologically, Tantra is a relational, sees the universe as a relational process, an interplay between the masculine and feminine aspects. And on a microcosmic level or on an individual level, that applies as well. And in any given relationship, there's always going to be connection and separateness and a dance between the individual and the couple, between your inner world and the external world. And what I think the great thing about the meditative aspects of Tantra is that there are really many of them designed to give you skills for navigating that interplay, so that you can go deep inside yourself and you can also go and really truly connect with your partner. And there are lots and lots of practices that are usually sensorially based that give you skills in doing this. So, for example, a very simple form would be to focus your attention on a sound, a distant sound, and really, really try to hear that sound as fully as you can. I'm hearing crickets right now, and they're not that distant. But, you know, I could listen to those crickets really intently and try to hear every nuance in the chirping of the crickets. And then, after a period of time, try to completely block out those sounds and just withdraw my consciousness internally. I mean, that's a very simplified form of a tantric meditation, and there are many others like that, many of them working with the senses. And it's so again, it's really about being skilled at navigating that, the whole spectrum between the external and the very, very internal. So we like to say becoming facile with your awareness.
Yeah, that is one of the keys.
And let's see, so there are those two DVDs, but you also make a special appearance in another DVD.
Yeah. That was a very, very interesting experience. I'll let Patricia.
Well, while we were in L.A. filming these two DVDs for the Alexander Institute, we got invited on the set for Tristan Taramino's shoot of Chemistry 4. And we thought, sure, let's go. It would be a great experience. If you're not familiar with, your listeners aren't familiar with Tristan's work, she's an award-winning porn director and her series.
And a sex educator.
And a sex educator, writer. And her series, Chemistry, are reality porn shoots. So there's five, six porn stars who are in a house for 36 hours and they can film and each other and can have whatever type of sex they like. And so we showed up at the shoot and she said, well, would you sign model releases? And we said, sure, because there was a lot of people walking around with cameras and maybe we'd get caught in a shot or something. But then she came up later and she said, will you teach him a Tantra class? And we went, wow, yeah, that would be cool. That would be fun. So here we are. We're with big celebrities, Cinnamon Love, Evan Stone, Adriana,
Nicole.
I mean, big stars in the business, and they sat
and
on the couch.
Former star Penny Flame.
Yeah, Penny Flame. Yes, that's right. And so we started talking about Tantra and the principles, and it was really turned out to be fascinating. The questions that came up afterwards were things that we, to be honest, don't deal with normal, with no usual couples that come to us to study. So, but.
Well, one of the things that I found most interesting, and I don't remember offhand how much of it actually made it into the film, but the men were asking questions like, well, what do I do if the woman I'm working with won't look at me? How do I make this work if I'm not getting any kind of connection with the person I'm performing with?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's you kind of never, I don't think as a viewer of porn, think of that sort of thing. But, and you think that these guys are just sort of machines, but they really, it was so interesting to see that the men actually wanted some kind of human contact and more than just, you know, just kind of pounding away.
Right.
So,
because I think some of those guys, I wouldn't say those particular guys on that set, but I do know that they do use Viagra.
Oh, yeah. I think so.
Yeah, but you know what? That doesn't work if you're not turned on.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
You need that energetic connection for some blood flow to start happening.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we got some really interesting questions, and it became sort of a theme in the film, and to the point which Tristan made it an entire chapter of the movie, our class, and then the actors referred to us and then their experiences later on in the film.
Yeah.
So.
And there's a very interesting scene with Penny.
Right.
Penny Flame, yeah.
Yeah, she really got very emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was like really so awed by the two of you, by the love that you have and that you're able to demonstrate, that she just like, she lost it. And she broke down.
Yeah.
But what was interesting was watching your demonstration, fully clothed, sitting there breathing. I found that far more interesting than most of the stuff that's in that was in the video. I'm sorry, Tristan, you know, but I just found that was just like totally blown away, and just hearing the two of you breathe together. You know, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's, it's kind of I hate to joke about it a little bit, but it can be sort of a party trick because we can bring each other to orgasm. I can do it without getting erection or anything, just using breath and moving energy.
Yeah, in a matter of minutes.
It's similar to the fire breath orgasm, but we do it together, and it's a very intense experience.
Fun, and yeah, I think it's really valuable for people to see that that's possible, and it really can take your definition of sex, especially if you associate it with just genital penetrations of sorts, and to see people actually have orgasm energetically, it can really blow that whole paradigm apart.
Yeah, well, obviously Penny got blown apart by something.
I've been sort of reading her blog, and I have to wonder if some aspect of that whole event was a factor, and what's going on with her, I don't know. Haven't heard from her or anything. But
I think it's, you know, when you live two lives, and you live two identities almost, because they have to, like, create this, almost this other identity for themselves, because her name is not Penny Flame. That's not her name. And I don't know how much of it was she was keeping secret, but it's like, it's almost the character Penny Flame took over.
Yeah.
And Jennifer had to get rid of Penny in order to survive.
Yeah. That's what it seems like. And I
imagine in a lot of other things, you know, actors of any sort or entertainers, you know, face that kind of thing when they become such a celebrity and a persona, and you know, majority of how you're relating to people is through that persona, not through who you are. It could get very, very confusing, and you'd have to be very, very grounded.
at least interesting for me because I've been having discussions with Susan Bacos. We're talking about creating a persona for me.
Oh.
And like, how far do I want to go with this? And also one of her other proteges, Alex Zola, in creating a persona for him, how far does he want to go with it? You know, how far are you willing to go? And that's a very interesting topic.
It actually leads around to sort of our initiated names and the whole tradition. Because, of course, if we were in India, we would, and the initiations that we'd have, those would be our names, and the identities that we have as Mark and Patricia would be gone post-initiation. But as people who live in the Western world, we can't really do that. And it's an interesting kind of balancing act. And at some levels, you know, we emphasize the names more in the first book because it's a more traditional book, and really downplay them in the second because part of our life is about service and about sharing, you know, what we've learned. And it seemed to us that in a way, if we had emphasized the initiated names with the second book, it would have diluted the message because we really wanted to share this knowledge with people who might be put off or confused by that.
Right.
It's certainly not at all the same thing as what, you know, it hasn't caused us any kind of meltdowns, it hasn't caused us identity crises. But it's a very delicate and complicated thing, and we thought long and hard about how we would use those initiated names.
Yeah. And especially when you use your personal life, as, you know, Mark and I do, to as part of your teaching. We're very honest and open about our lives. We do have private parts of our lives, but there's a good chunk of it that we're very open and with sharing because of the value that we feel it imparts for people. Just, it gives them another perspective. But I think there would be a line if it felt like we were we lost the Mark and Patricia that we get to hang out at home instead.
Yeah,
we had to
yeah.
be the lecturing Mark and Patricia. I think that would feel weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely appreciate Mark and Patricia. I am so happy and grateful that you came on tonight. And I think this has been one of the best shows that I've done. And I think it's one of the best conversations I've had with you.
Well, as always, we always just start talking, right?
Yeah, and I'm gonna make it down to the Pleasure Salon this coming June.
Great,
okay.
Great.
Yep,
it's coming up this Wednesday,
and
so.
It's always
right.
the first Wednesday of every month. If people are interested, they can look at thepleasuresalon.com and or pleasuresalon.com, and it's a great.
And
community.
It's also on Facebook as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And hopefully one day we'll see Patricia there too on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, my page is kind of our page, but it's mostly my page.
But again, I want to give these wonderful books, The Essence of Tantric Sexuality and Tantra for Erotic Empowerment. And you can find out more about them at tantrapm.com.
You got it.
As well as online study.
Yep.
Yeah.
And also the DVDs, Tantric Sexual Massage for Lovers and Advanced Tantric Sex Secrets. I want to thank Mark and Patricia again, once again. And I want to thank you all for listening to me tonight. This is Stephen Otero speaking, and you're listening to Mondo Eros live on bbsradio.com. Thank you, good evening, and namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste.